You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Thursday, November 2nd, 2017. I want to just have a sort of short episode today, breaking down the Clippers' big win last night over the Dallas Mavericks. And then tomorrow we should have a pretty special treat for you guys. I'm going to talk for a little bit with my good buddy Mark King, who covers the Memphis Grizzlies, in anticipation of Saturday's matinee against the Grizzlies. Now, I am going to be out of town over the weekend, so we'll see what happens. I'll do my best to try to catch up on the Memphis and Miami games over the weekend so that we can talk about it on Monday, but that should be a really good preview with Mark tomorrow talking about the Grizzlies. So I'm really excited for that. Mark's a great guy, so hopefully you guys really enjoy that. So today I just want to tackle the Dallas game, the Clippers win in Dallas, go through some individual performances, and probably not too long. But so the Clippers came out a little lackluster in this game, I thought, or maybe kind of a hangover from that Pistons and Golden State loss back-to-back, like this little slide that they had. But they were able to turn it around a little bit. They kind of made it to the end of the first quarter with a little lead, 32-29. But you don't really want to be giving up 29 points in a quarter to the Dallas Mavericks. And then the Clippers, with the second unit, Doc Rivers made a pretty interesting choice. He did something he hasn't done all year, which is instead of playing, or he played Willie Reed initially at backup center, but then what he did is he actually took Willie Reed out and put in Montrezl Harrell with the second unit. And this second unit, probably a lineup we didn't expect to see a lot of coming into the season, of Lou Williams, Sindarius Thornwell, Wesley Johnson, Danilo Gallinari, and Montrezl Harrell. That five-man unit came in with a lot of energy. They played really well. They kind of boosted the game open in the second quarter. And then when the starters came back in, they were able to stretch the lead out. And it was never really a game after the first couple minutes of the second quarter when that bench unit kind of opened the lead up to double digits. So I thought that was really interesting. I don't think that it necessarily means that Montrezl Harrell has overtaken Willie Reed. I think that Willie Reed has played very well so far this season, but I think obviously Montrezl Harrell was phenomenal last night. I think it might be a matchup thing with how Doc Rivers uses them. I think we might see more of one or more of, I think over the course of the season we'll see more of Willie Reed, but we'll probably see a good deal of Montrez as well. The Clippers, well, Montrezl Harrell is going to be a restricted free agent next summer, so it is important for the Clippers to get some extended looks at him and see what he can do. Part of Montrez's problem is that he doesn't really have the size for a center, but he doesn't really have the skill for a power forward. So he could potentially play power forward in a lineup next to a guy who was a little more skilled. Like you could play him probably with a guy like Mo Spates, but it's hard to play him with DeAndre Jordan or Willie Reed because both of those guys are around the basket finishers, which is the same thing that Montrez does. But because the Mavericks don't really have a center, and a lot of times they were playing like Dwight Powell and Dirk Nowitzki at center, the Clippers were able to bring in Montrez and not lose much in that like Montrez Dwight Powell matchup, where you would lose a lot more in a Montrez matchup against, you know, a guy like JaVale McGee. So I think that was interesting. That's something to watch for. Different lineups, different matchup situations where Doc Rivers can use Montrez as the season goes on. He was phenomenal last night. In 13 minutes, he had 8 points, 8 rebounds, an assist, and a block. So really great game for Montrez. And it was his first real meaningful minutes of the season. I don't think he's played in non-garbage time until last night. So that was good to see. I mean, ideally, you'd like to include Montrez and Willie going forward, but it's just hard to find the minutes because, like I said, it's hard to build a matchup where, or to build a lineup where Montrez can play power forward because your two centers are DeAndre and Willie, and neither of those are really good fits. So let's just talk a little bit about some individual performances. So Blake, I thought, was very good. Minutes stayed down, 28 minutes. 20 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds on 7 of 12 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3, so he's keeping up that 3-point shooting. I don't mind this whole, you know, falling in love with the 3-ball narrative because I just don't see it. I don't see why it's a bad thing. I think we get a lot of this talk about, oh, he's falling in love with a three ball, as in, like, it's okay if he shoots one or two, but if he shoots more than one or two, he's in love with it, and being in love with it is bad. I don't understand why being in love with it is bad. If you're shooting 40 or 50% from three, it's a really good possession. That's the shot you want. That's a great shot. Blake Griffin shot 2 of 4. So in those, you know, in those four possessions, he got 1.5 points per possession with shooting threes last night. That means that, you know, a good possession is normally like around 1 point per possession, or a little higher, 1.1. So 1.5 is phenomenal. Now, I do understand where the downsides come, because if he looks for the three-pointer too much, he's not going to be getting as many inside looks. The offense can stall. He's not going to get offensive rebounds. All that comes into play a little bit. But to the extent that we're already seeing teams be a little more scared of that three-point shot, and then we're seeing him more utilize that pump fake and drive to the basket, I'm a fan. And sometimes there's questionable decisions, or sometimes he'll hesitate because he just doesn't have thousands of reps shooting catch-and-shoot threes like a guy like Gallinari or J.J. Redick does. But I think as the season goes on, that'll all become a little more natural for him. So I am not even fine. I'm very happy. I'm thrilled with how the shooting has gone for Blake Griffin so far this season. I'm not worried at all about falling in love with a three-point shot. I do understand that it can happen at times, and it can detract from other areas of his game because he's trying to be J.J. Redick instead of Blake Griffin. But I don't see it yet, and I think that that's something maybe we'll worry about when we start seeing it. Danilo Gallinari, I thought, had his best game as a Clipper so far, which isn't necessarily saying much because he hasn't been great, but 14 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 5 of 10 shooting, 3 of 7 from deep. He was just effective. He made more shots, and that's good. I mean, he just needs to make shots. I haven't really thought that he's played poorly in a game yet this season where I thought, like, man, Gallo's playing bad. I just thought he was missing shots. So it's good to see him start missing shots and just kind of see him get going a little bit. He's a guy who the Clippers are going to need over the course of the season to score more points. I mean, even, you know, 14 points is not enough. The Clippers really are going to need more scoring from him individually. But it was nice to see him sort of get that start there. Now, if you haven't done so, I just want to take a moment to remind you guys, if you listen on iTunes, please go subscribe and leave a 5-star review for the show Locked On Clippers. Moving on to the rest of the starting lineup, I thought that DeAndre Jordan, he had like a, you know, prepackaged DeAndre Jordan game, right? 13 points, 9 rebounds, 2 blocks, 24 minutes, 4 or 5 shooting. This is like your prepackaged DeAndre Jordan blowout win performance, right? He comes in, he finishes a few lob dunks, he finishes around the basket, he grabs some rebounds. 9 rebounds in 24 minutes is actually really good, because that's like a 14.5 per, or 13.5 per 36 line. Couple blocks, great stuff, in and out. Beverly was a little quiet last night. 8 points, 3 rebounds, 3 steals, and an assist. You know, he just, you know, he goes out there, he plays defense, he facilitates the offense. I've noticed with Beverly a lot is that he drives baseline and jumps, and he gets, it can, you know, it's the good and the bad, because sometimes when you drive baseline and you get under the basket, you've sucked so much defensive attention inwards that he can find shooters all over the perimeter. But there are also times where he gets into turnover situations, or, you know, throws a less than ideal pass because he kind of trapped himself underneath the backboard. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, we don't have a huge sample size of him in the Clippers to see how much this happens or how effective he is at it. But that's something I'm interested to see going forward, if that's something that becomes like a trademark good play or a trademark bad play for Patrick Beverley. And then Austin was the Clippers' second leading scorer last night with 19 points, 7 of 12 shooting, 2 of 4 from deep, 3 assists. Solid all-around game from Austin. I think that a lot of people get upset with Austin because Austin is like a score-first guy. And you can see it. You know, sometimes you see him come down the floor, and just from the look on his face, from his body language, you know he's going to the rim. And people want Austin to be a pass-first point guard. But I think that, I mean, it's good for the team. We see his efficiency numbers. We see his scoring numbers. We see the team doing well when he's on the floor in the past several years. So, again, this is a thing like with Blake Griffin falling in love with a three-point shot. Yeah, Austin Rivers is aggressive going to the basket. I just don't see why that's a bad thing. He scores points. He gets to the foul line. And sometimes, you know, people say Austin misses a lot of layups, but what I think people maybe don't realize is that Austin gets probably more layups than any other guard that the Clippers have had in years because he attacks to the rim. And so sometimes he's trying to shoot floaters or these reverse shots that are more difficult than your standard layup, and he misses some of them. But his overall finishing percentages are fine, and he's productive around the basket, which is really good to have a guard who can go downhill. Would he be a better basketball player if he had better court vision and could find guys for lobs or dump-off passes or kick-out passes when he drives? Yeah, he would be a better basketball player if he had that additional skill. But that doesn't mean that he's not good or not helping with the skill set that he has, because he is good and he is helping with the skill set that he has. And he was pretty big for the Clippers last night. 19 points in 25 minutes is nothing to take lightly. Like, that's a really big contribution. Doing just a rundown of some of the bench guys, I'll start with like the most important guys, so like the entrenched rotation guys, and then work through the rest of them. So the two really entrenched rotation guys, having already talked about Montrezl Harrell and Willie Reed early on, the two really entrenched rotation guys are Wesley Johnson and Lou Williams. So Wesley, you know, I don't have a ton of notes for him from last night's game in specific, but I think he continues to just be solid. He continues to look a little better in man-to-man defense than he has been in the past couple years with the Clippers. Not quick, not staying in front of little guards, but just a little more capable of staying in front of anyone. Whereas in the past, we really, you know, it was kind of a situation where Wesley could not stay in front of someone if they were dribbling at him. He could only help off the ball with his length. He's been a little more effective in man-to-man defense this year. He had 9 points, 4 rebounds, an assist, and a steal. 3 of 6 from the field. Got to the line a couple times. He had at least one really, you know, one transition play where he really showed off his athleticism with a huge monster dunk. And that's exciting to see from Wesley, because he has not, he's like so athletic. He's crazy athletic, and he just doesn't use it. Like, he rarely ever dribbles, which is so confusing to me, because he's so athletic. But when we finally do get to see him run out, he gets like a few of these plays a year, and that was just a phenomenal play. So hopefully the confidence is coming. He certainly seems confident in his jump shot. He is letting it fly whenever he has a look at a jumper. So hopefully that confidence keeps growing and we can see more of him during the season, because we're seeing a much different Wesley Johnson this year than we've seen in years past, and he seems pretty entrenched as one of the Clippers' main backup guys right now. The other guy, I think, who I've been, you know, continually very impressed with is Lou Williams. He had a super efficient game last night. 17 points, 5 of 8 from the field, 2 of 3 from deep, 5 of 5 from the line. Also added 4 rebounds and 4 assists, basically playing out of position as the second unit's point guard while Milos Teodosic is out. And what I thought was interesting is that, you know, I've sort of been saying, because the Clippers are playing, they're playing these four guards right now, right? Beverly Rivers, Lou Williams, and Thornwell. Three of those guys can dribble and create as sort of combo guards, but aren't really pure point guards, being Beverly Rivers and Lou Williams. And Thornwell is not a creator, really. He's a defender. He finishes some plays in transition. He shoots some open threes, but he's not an offensive creator. So it made sense to me that you would want to play, whenever Thornwell was in, you'd also kind of want Blake Griffin to be in, so that you had that extra guy who was capable of handling and bringing the ball up the court. So it was really interesting to me that the Clippers had so much success with that Lou Williams, Thornwell, Wesley Johnson, Gallinari, and Montrezl Harrell lineup, because Thornwell, Wesley Johnson, and Montrezl Harrell are, none of those guys are creators on offense at all. Gallinari can create, but he's probably much more effective as a finisher of plays. The creation is much more effectively done if done by one of the guards or by Blake Griffin. And then you have Lou Williams. And Lou Williams, you know, I just think he's been phenomenal so far this season. He was phenomenal last night. I think you do have to be careful about the situations in which you use him, because while he's made some defensive plays, and he said, you know, here's, so I don't think Lou Williams is a good defender at all, but I think he's bought in, which makes a big difference, because we see him taking charges, we see him making rotations, we see him hustling and getting on the floor for loose balls, and that means a lot to me as a viewer, as someone evaluating him, because it means that he's bought into the system and he's not being like a net negative on the team's defense very often. But when you get into certain matchups with these teams that have high-powered backcourts, Dallas is not one of them. But against Golden State, he just has a really hard time individually with his footwork and his lateral quickness staying with guys and being an effective individual defender. So I think he's a guy that you do have to be careful about the situations in which you use him. I think, you know, in Golden State, because, or against Golden State, because it's always Curry or Thompson, right? I feel like his plus minus was, I think, the worst on the team in that game, because all of their defensive struggles were only exacerbated when you have Lou Williams individually guarding one of those guys. But I think if you are a little more careful with your matchups, you play them against the second units of other teams or against other teams that at least don't have like this a dominant scoring guard at one of the guard positions, and you let him guard that guy, then what he does on the offensive end is insanely, insanely valuable. I've been super, super pleased with it. Just a reminder for you guys, as we head into the weekend full of NFL games, if you are a Los Angeles football fan, you should check out the Locked On Chargers podcast or the Locked On Rams podcast, or both, or the Locked On podcast for whatever your football team is. We have podcasts for every NBA and NFL team. The network is great. I work with all these guys. We email all the time. They're awesome. So you should definitely check their shows out. Now, for the last portion of the episode, I just want to run through kind of rapid fire these bench guys and how they've performed and what it kind of looks like. So I think the most prominent guy at this point to discuss is Sindarius Thornwell. I think he's clearly ahead of guys like Sam Decker on Doc Rivers' sort of trust list. And even though his stat line isn't sexy, 23 minutes, 3 points, 3 assists, a rebound, a block, 4 fouls, you know, there's not much there. 1 of 4 from the field, but he's so solid. He's in the right spot on the floor. He runs lanes. He knows how to use his body to draw fouls. Even though he's not super athletic and he doesn't have a lot of size, it seems like he doesn't get his shot blocked very much around the basket. He uses his body to draw fouls really well, and he's a very, very solid individual defender, which is not something that you normally see for a rookie. So I think he's a guy that, even though he's not putting up the numbers to be like, wow, we have to keep playing him, I do think he's remarkably solid in that role. And then I think he's a guy who probably doesn't show as much in garbage time, where you look for the young players in garbage time to show out, because he doesn't have those individual scoring skills. He's just a really solid rotation player. So I think he's a guy who probably stands to stay in the rotation even when the Clippers are healthy again. I think he's definitely earned it ahead of Sam Decker to this point. Sam Decker, you know, looks a little lost at times when he's in, although I'm still excited and optimistic for Sam Decker in the long term. But yeah, I've been really pleased with Sindarius Thornwell. One way that I used to think about when I played, because I played for like this really good AAU program, and I had multiple teammates who are playing Division I basketball now, and I was never at that level. I just wasn't. I was not a Division I player. But the way that I thought about it a lot of times is, if I'm going to be the fifth best player in our lineup, how can I be the best fifth best player that I can be? Like, how can I be the best worst player on the team? How can I make sure that I space the floor and hit open threes? How can I make sure that I take charges and don't get lost on off the ball defense? Right? Like, these are the things that you think about when you're in this rotation, in this situation. And that's kind of the situation that Sindarius is in, I think. How can I be the best supporter to these stars that I can be? So he's out there with a guy like Lou Williams, who's won sixth man of the year, Gallinari, who's a 20-point a game scorer in the NBA, Blake Griffin, who's an all-NBA player, DeAndre Jordan, who's an all-NBA player, you know, Austin Rivers, who goes out there and scores 20 points when he's in the starting lineup, Patrick Beverley, all defensive first team. And Sindarius Thornwell is out there in a rotation on an NBA team with these guys in the first couple weeks of his rookie season. And I think the mindset is probably, how do I be the best worst player on the team? And the answer to that is, play really good individual defense, be tough, don't give up any ground when you're matched up with another team's elite scorer, play good team defense, always be in the right position, run the floor hard on the fast break, get to the free throw line, and hit open shots when the ball gets swung to you. And so far, he's been successful at that. I'm not sure about the three-point shot, and I've, you know, harped on this a lot with Sindarius, but a lot of what he's doing, I think, is sustainable. And I think, as long as he stays within himself and within that role, I think he continue to be productive for the team in that role. The contrast to that kind of is the Clippers' other rookie, Juwan Evans, who I think we saw a little bit more of his flaws that I've discussed exposed against the Mavericks last night. again, just like with the Warriors game, we're operating in garbage time. So the defense isn't playing very hard, and you're playing against other teams' third stringers as well, so it's not like the success can translate to starter or backup quality players on future teams. And the Mavericks are probably the worst team in the NBA. But what we saw with Juwan, I thought a couple times in garbage time in the fourth quarter of this game, was the over-penetration that kind of limits him, like we've been talking about going back to the draft, which is he's so little, and he dribbles in so far, and he gets so close to the body of someone who's bigger than him that he runs out of options except for throw up a crazy wild floater or try to make a difficult pass that ends up in a turnover, because he's so little, the guy guarding him is bigger than him, and there's just not a lot of space for him to operate in, because he puts his head down and goes into the body instead of sort of maintaining a buffer that gives him better angles to move the ball, either whether it be a shot or a pass. So we saw those limitations, 1-for-4 from the field, 2 turnovers. Some of those possessions were not very pretty. Again, I like Juwan. I think we see a lot of good things as well. I think, you know, we saw him hit a three-pointer. We see his quickness, which is astounding. He has good vision coming off the pick and roll when he has space to actually make those passes. He normally makes pretty good passes. So I do think, you know, I do still like Juwan. It's not like I'm low on him, but for everyone who's been clamoring, well, if Milos is hurt, then Juwan needs to play. We're seeing Juwan's limitations. We're seeing the things that he has to work through. I think that D-League minutes this year are going to be good for him, and I'm not overly eager to throw him into the fire in the Clippers lineup right now. Sam Dekker, you know, the last two guys are Sam Dekker and Bryce Johnson, who I talked about a lot on the last episode with the Clippers deciding on their options. Like I said, I think I'm optimistic for Sam Dekker long term, but right now he's still kind of getting his legs under him in the Clippers system. And Bryce just looked really listless last night. It's a tough spot to come in from having your option being declined the night before, and now you're going to be on this team for the next, you know, 5 or 6 months, knowing that you're not going to be back next year already. Everyone else, it's kind of up in the air, right? Like, even if you're going to be a free agent like Lou Williams is, Lou Williams could be re-signed by the Clippers next summer, or he knows that he's going to be able to get on an NBA team somewhere else. Bryce Johnson's NBA career might be over unless he can really impress in garbage time in the coming months, which is psychologically really demanding of a guy going into these garbage time minutes. So he definitely struggled last night. Hopefully we can see a little bit, you know, I would like for him to succeed. Obviously, I don't want him to fail. This was a really difficult situation, just coming off of the option being declined. So hopefully as the season goes on, he's able to sort of reconcile with the position that he's in and then reach a determination that he's got to work hard and have a good season, you know, maybe even in the D-League, but to sort of continue his NBA career. I think that last night probably wasn't a good night to try to get started on that. But that's it. Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Once again, be sure to check out tomorrow's episode. I'm going to be talking with my good buddy Mark King about the Clippers' upcoming matchup with the Grizzlies. You're not going to want to miss that. And that's it. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.